Happy Monday. Welcome back. So happy to have you guys here with us until 1 o'clock. Lot to discuss from the Titans' win against the Indianapolis Colts. A little bit to talk about from the Volunteers' loss against Florida. We'll do that with Austin Burledge coming up next. Power T Tape. We do it every Monday to recap a Vols win or a loss to break down the X's and O's. Stick around for that. Got Mike Vrabel's press conference for you at 12:30, and I'm going to tell you at 12 o'clock what he had to say last night about Julio Jones. Because Julio Jones basically didn't play, all but one half of the third quarter, and then was chilling on the sidelines with Bud Dupree. That also a situation to monitor. If you guys want to get involved, you may do so. 615-737-1045, 615-737-1045. It's how you let us know what you liked, what you didn't like, your observations from the Tennessee Titans 25-16 win over the Colts at Nissan Stadium. Or you could be like Jonah Clement, who's arguing vehemently with me in the Zone TV chat on YouTube, where he says the O-line should have played better yesterday, talking about the Titans. He says, Henry had 114 on the ground, but I got so sick of seeing 2nd and 8. And then he goes on to say, no push, Henry falls forward for 2 yards, blah, 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 blah. So he clearly didn't watch. And Lucas, make sure I'm unmuted because I think he's watching on Zone TV, and I want to make sure that this idiot can hear me. Okay, Lucas tells me now he can't. All right, very good. So Jonah Clement, who is watching on Zone TV, has been arguing about the lack of push that the offensive line's getting. And I want to make sure that Jonah can hear me when I say, well, it's clear that he doesn't know anything about what the Titans did in the ground game yesterday, because multiple times, particularly early in that game, even though the runs aren't going for 10 or 12 or 15 yards for Derek, and even though 114 yards is, I would almost call that a pedestrian Henry performance, would you not? The offensive line played as good a football game, specifically in the ground game, as I have seen them play all year. So if you would like to showcase your ignorance by telling everybody that you didn't actually watch the game yesterday, or you're talking about something that you didn't actually pay attention to, because of course we know that Jonah Clement is breaking down the X's and O's of the offensive line, you are welcome to do so. But that also gives you permission, if you're going to put such ignorance in the Zone TV chat, to roast you, because that is as dumbass a comment as I've heard all day long. And I've seen a lot of dumb stuff on the internet in the last 24 hours. The offensive line played their best game of the season yesterday, even though the rushing total isn't as monumental as it was in Seattle. That is more by the gifts that God gave Derrick Henry than it is by anything else. Derrick Henry had a good game yesterday. The offensive line had a good one. As Spencer says, it's not safe in here. It's true. Once you comment, that means you're fair game, fair or foul. 615-737-1045 is how you get involved throughout the course of the show. So let's talk about Derrick Henry, shall we? But let's not talk about the running game. I want to talk about this emergence of Derrick Henry, Titans running back, dual threat? Question mark? Well, Lucas, Lucas just whispered something to my ear.
I want to play the call again. I want to play the mic.
Oh, the Darius Leonard call.
The 14-yard, yeah.
Oh, would it make you happy to hear the soul stolen from Darius Leonard?
Yes.
Okay, do it.
Play fake. Tannehill going to screen it to Henry on the left. He's got a block 45-50. 45, he runs over Leonard and is taken down at the 40. Ha! Rock 'em, sock 'em, robots. He laid the wood to him.
The Coach Mac laugh, just it tickles me.
That will be a drop on this show, by the way.
Oh, that is, of course, Titans Radio's call of a 2nd and what was the down and distance? Let me make sure that I have it correct. The 2nd and 8, Ryan Tannehill screen pass to Derrick Henry for 14 yards that stole the life, if not the soul, of Colts linebacker Darius Leonard. And in fact, Lucas went up and dredged the internet for Derrick Henry's top 100 NFL players of 2020 that the NFL Network does in that lull, in that dead period before training camp begins or while training camp is going on, to generate content. Derrick Henry, I think, was the fourth best player in the NFL as voted on by his peers. And so they always put together a highlight package and commentary from players that have played with, for, and against, in the case of Darius Leonard, Derrick Henry. And Darius Leonard's commentary was telling from this video, what, back in August? In August, of what he said about Derrick Henry on the NFL's top 100 list.
How big is he? Let's see. Just think about LeBron. You know, LeBron is about, well, 6'8", 200 and about 60 pounds. Derrick Henry is about 6'4". There's no way I'm getting him anything lower than 250. That's a guy that you would hate to play against twice a year. You know he's getting the ball. You know he's going to run right at you. He's not going to sugarcoat anything. He's able to absorb hits, and fourth quarter, he's still going.
In 2020,
so, you know, we can do without the commentary from Big Voice Guy.
In 2020.
Wait, what do you mean? That's you. That's your future. When we get fired as a show collectively and this whole thing goes up in flames.
It's a very lucrative occupation.
Yeah, actually. I was about to say, you mock it now, but just wait. When you're the next voice of an Arby's commercial, Lucas.
No, those guys got it figured out.
I'm going to remember this moment.
No, but that was Darius Leonard. That's his commentary. I mean, he popped up several times throughout that video.
And listen, Darius Leonard did not go throughout the course of yesterday's game without making plays. Of course, he had the interception of Ryan Tannehill. Darius Leonard was active. It's just the Titans found ways to effectively cover him up and free Derrick Henry. But before I tell you what most intrigues me about Derrick Henry's game through three games, let's go to the phone. 615-737-1045. Joshua is in the borough. He wants to talk about Derrick Henry. What's up, Josh?
Hey, Derrick Henry's development from the time he got drafted to now has been really impressive. And I noticed yesterday at the game they were able to get him involved in some screen action.
Yeah.
And I feel like if they can continue to do that with his ability to locate the ball, bring it in, and get extra yards, I think that could be a big boost to our overall offense and help those receivers get going.
Oh, no, Josh, and I appreciate the call because that's the observation. You stole my thunder. Next he's going to steal my job, and then Lucas and I will be doing voiceover work much sooner than we anticipated. But so this is the second game in a row where Derrick Henry and Julio Jones have tied for the amount of receptions that they've gotten a game. 6 against the Seahawks, 3 apiece for Derrick Henry and Julio Jones against the Indianapolis Colts yesterday. And we'll expand on the Julio Jones conversation at noon, so stick around for that.
Just as we all predicted.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, but this was foreshadowing, because you'll remember when talking about Todd Downing as the new offensive coordinator in Tennessee, and hearkening back to his time in Oakland, I remember, and I don't have the stat in front of me, and I wish that I would have thought to bring it to the show today so we could talk like we actually know what we're talking about. But Zach Lyons from Football and Other F-Words, he had the stat about how often Todd Downing in Oakland involved his running backs in the passing game, be it by check down, screen, or otherwise. You're seeing that with Derek, where, you know, when they're running coverages and the defensive coverage starts to sink back because the receivers are breaking into their route concepts, Derrick Henry runs a quick, what do you want to call it? It's not an out route. I don't even know what the proper route terminology is, but just goes forward for like 5 yards, turns around, sits down, catches the ball, first down. They did it with McNichols. They're doing it with Henry. And the thing that was missing from the Titans offense last year, good as it was the regularity and the execution of a consistent screen game. Now, I don't know what to attribute that to. In fact, I would hope, and I'm not going to be able to attend in person the Mike Vrabel press conference today, because obviously it's at 12:30 and we'll still be doing the radio show. But I'm going to text Teron Davenport or Rex Rhodes or somebody to ask about their improvement year over year in the execution of the screen game, because that's what's been missing since 2019 from Derrick Henry's versatility as a player. And now it seems that they found their foothold in that regard. We will we'll take your calls coming up next. Austin Burledge of Power T Tape is going to join us in that segment as well. We'll talk a little bit about the Vols in Florida. Charles in Nashville will lead us off on the other side as we continue this conversation about the Titans' win over the Colts. That's up next. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back. Buck Rising here with you till 1 o'clock. Talking Titans, going to get a little bit of Vols in because it was a fun weekend of college football. Clemson, an ACC loss. Vols in the swamp. First half went shockingly well, and then things kind of started to turn, as they tend to do, between two teams of that caliber, and certainly some upsets over the weekend. I mean, my God, I think I may proclaim, since I don't have a college football allegiance, like I know I went to Indiana, but I'm not going to sit there and lie to people and say that I'm a diehard Indiana Hoosiers fan when I just started watching them that one bowl game against Tennessee, and that's because I had a bet on the line with David Reed about shaving my head. So I think every year I should declare my allegiance for a different college football team. Like I'm going to, 4 weeks in, bandwagon off somebody.
Yeah, you really know how to endear yourself to Southern college football fans.
What do you want me to say? Like I'm going to lie to people?
Root for your alma mater, man. Come on.
Why?
It's just how these things work. You're stuck with who you're stuck with.
That's not true. I'm not beholden to your rules, all right? Just because you want to be tribal down here in SEC football country, that does not mean the rest of us have to live our lives that way.
Who do you want?
I want Arkansas.
I do like Arkansas.
I love Arkansas. So now for the season, now watch, they'll lose every game after this. For the season, I think I'm going to declare myself an Arkansas fan. Anyway, we'll talk about the SEC in depth, in greater depth tomorrow. And Austin Burledge of Power T Tape will be with us here in just a second. But in the meantime, we've been talking about Derrick Henry and his involvement in the passing game. Not just what he's able to contribute on the ground. Total yardage matters just as much as rushing yardage, even if that doesn't necessarily help Derrick Henry get to 2,000 yards rushing in back-to-back years, even though he's on track to right now. Flat out, 2,000. Lucas did the math. I didn't double-check it because I'm bad at math. Anyway, Charles is in Nashville, wants to weigh in. What's up, Charles?
I tell you, I was at the game yesterday, and every time I see Derrick Henry with a full head of steam, it is like watching a freaking Yeti run downhill with a helmet on. The guy is a beast. In fact, Yeti coolers ought to give him an endorsement because every time the big man hits you, he's going to put you on ice.
Yeah, no, it was something, Charles. Thank you for the call. Like, I thought about tweeting that out because at any time Derrick Henry would get like 3 or 4 yards past the line of scrimmage yesterday, you would see the fans in the stand immediately jump to their feet, right? Because they're just waiting. Everybody is waiting with great anticipation for Derrick Henry to break a long, whether it's a touchdown run or just a long gain. The entire stadium starts to surge as soon as he gets like 5 yards down the field. It's such a cool thing. And I saw this observation made by our buddy Ryan Hurd, musical recording artist and songwriter Ryan Hurd, also a big Michigan fan. I wonder how he's doing lately. But Hurd, I saw tweeted out, does anybody else, and this was this morning, does anybody else feel like Derrick Henry is just starting to get going? And it honestly feels that way, which should make Titans fans very, very happy. Now, on the other side of things, I don't know how Vols fans are feeling today. So why don't we check in with Austin Burledge as we do each and every week, except for last week, because Austin is a new dad and there are priorities, even though most of us would not believe it, there are priorities outside of football. And so congratulations to you and your family, Austin. That's fantastic.
I appreciate that, Buck. Yeah, I thought she came. My daughter was born at like 9:30 in the morning on Saturday, and then we got to watch a 56-point blowout win, and then Tennessee got off to a hot start against Florida, and I thought, I cracked the code. I thought, like, this is it. She's our good luck charm, and the curse of Florida has been lifted. That turned out not to be true.
But still,
my daughter is a darling, and I love her very much, so thank you.
Well, absolutely. We're incredibly happy for you. Now, it's funny that you bring up, good luck charms and children, because I went to the Titans-Seahawks game, obviously, to cover that a week ago, and there was a gentleman who had it wasn't a newborn, probably like 8 months old, and they took the little guy to the game, and they said every game that we've been to, every road game that we've been to prior to him being born, the Titans have lost. So now he has to come to every road game in the future because he's clearly good luck. And I'm looking at this little child who has no idea what's going on. And it's 70,000 people in Seattle screaming. And I'm like, you're taking your children to this thing? But whatever.
Loudest stadium in the country, right? I mean, but yeah. Hey, that's the rule now. You just got to be there. Hey, can we take a quick detour, speaking of Titans, and just how good did you look in that suit yesterday, man?
Buddy,
that
I looked great.
what was that, Buck Burgundy out there? I mean, that was phenomenal.
That's exactly what that is. So, listen, we're living well nowadays, and I just started getting suits made for me, and there was some fun had at my expense because it did look a little bit like I was trying to model my game off like the Joker. But I look damn good in purple.
Oh, for Rex Road, no. It was the, what's the McDonald's character? The big Grimace. Purple thing? Yeah, Grimace.
Yeah, so, well, I thought that was just him trying to be cute with a fat joke. But listen, it took me 20 minutes to help Rex Road set up that joke because he has been going through, two decades now as a sports media person. I understand Twitter hadn't been around for two decades. But this idiot doesn't know how to copy and paste pictures off of the internet, save them to his phone, and post them on Twitter. It was fascinating to me to watch him be an 85-year-old man. Anyway.
You did not have to do it to him, Buck, but you did, and we appreciate you for it.
You're damn right. Game days are game days for everybody, not just the players on the field. All right, let's talk about the Vols. Because the first half, you're right, they got up, they got the lead. It was impressive the way that they were doing it. Hendon Hooker was operating with efficiency. I thought it was brave of Cooper Mays to kind of gut it out the way that he did, but glad that they kind of, that they got him out of there basically in preparation for Missouri, which is going to be a critical game for this team in the SEC. How were they able? Let's start with the first half. What did you see them doing that allowed them to generate that lead?
Yeah, so two things that I saw that I really liked. So one thing that Tennessee, obviously, and Heupel, going back to his time at UCF, has been known for is obviously the pace. We've seen the graphics on Twitter, fastest offense in college football. And even Heupel said in some press conferences, right, like, we can go faster. And even some players have said, we think we can be faster. So it's all been predicated on how fast can we get plays off. And their pace was what we have come to expect. But what I really liked is on a couple third downs, they actually slowed it down, used the whole clock. And that's what happened on the Tyon Evans screen pass for the touchdown. That was a 3rd and 8, I believe, from plus territory. I want to say about the 44-yard line. And they got to the line quickly like they usually do, but then actually took some time, saw what Florida was trying to do, signaled in a play, got what they wanted. Now, Evans did make a guy miss. Maybe it could have been blocked a little bit better, but I really liked that. And they did it a couple times. Unfortunately, backfired in the second half when we had 4th and 2 and used too much time and had a delay of game and then punted. That's a separate conversation. But I really liked that in the first half. Not everything has to be at a million miles per hour. Get in the play that you like and go from there. Number two, I really liked Florida. Most teams will end up playing a lot of man coverage based on the split of Tennessee's wide receivers when they go spread. So Tennessee did a lot of man coverage beating concepts. And I think we saw that particularly in the first half, if we're talking first half, like the Javonte Payton touchdown, that was purely man. And the defensive back got his eyes in the backfield because it was a stacked formation. So he thought, based on how the receivers came out, it was going to be a run, got his eyes in the backfield, just ran right by him, freed him up for a touchdown. Saw another couple things, like we used Jalen Hyatt in motion. It's harder to play man when you have a lot of motion running around. You can't run across the field with them. So those were two areas where I really felt like Tennessee in the first half had a good amount of success.
Yeah, no, and it was clear and obvious to everybody. Now, I don't know how close attention you pay. I know you're studying the tape, but I don't know how close attention you pay, Austin, to the post-game press conferences, because I was laughing. In fact, Lucas, can we play that Dan Mullen sound for Austin Berlage? Have you heard this of him complimenting Tennessee?
Yeah, is this where he kind of pats us on the head a little bit?
Yeah, can we play that for the audience? Austin has clearly heard it, but I would like for Vols fans to experience it, what appeared to be pity that Dan Mullen was kind of patting his opponent on the head.
Had to go play an excellent Tennessee team. You know, I think you look at them, the physical group, the physical on both sides of the ball. Some good athletes. Their quarterback, I thought, played pretty well, really well today, hitting some shots, creating big plays. They're an explosive type of offense, and you can see that they the improvements they've made in 1 year, and what Coach Heupel's doing with them, and how those guys play. And our guys had to come out and play hard for four quarters. And you know, in the first half, I thought a couple mistakes here and there, and we went in and challenged the guys at halftime.
So that's Dan Mullen going on and on after being hugely complimentary. That doesn't make anybody feel any better. Although I saw people touting it as some kind of moral victory Saturday on Twitter.
Yeah, I was actually disappointed, and I don't want to be the negative guy. I mean, I think there are areas where you can look at Tennessee and be optimistic about some things that they did, but it's hard for me to feel like Tennessee is really that much more improved. I mean, we lost by 12, I think, last year to the Florida Gators, and they were ranked 13th. So this year we lost by 24. I think Pruitt's first year we lost to Florida by 26. I mean, so the gap to me, I mean, at least on the scoreboard where it counts, is just as wide as it has been the last few years. And probably going back to that 2016 upset at home. And along with that, I mean, you know, yeah, credit to Tennessee for making plays, but like we just talked about, I mean, one of their touchdowns was a coverage bust. And we didn't score at all in the second half. So again, some positives to take away from it, but at the same time, you know, I didn't like the quote personally, but that's just me.
Austin Burlage of Power T Tape is here with us as he is every Monday, except on the Mondays after he has a child. Talking about the Vols and the Gators at Austin_Burlage is where you can follow him.
Austin, you mentioned seeing a lot of single man coverage when the Vols are spread out, like on that Javonte Payton touchdown against Florida. Obviously, there's been a lot of those open looks. Josh Heupel's gotten credit for scheming up those open looks, all the overthrows over the first 3 weeks. Have the majority of those, in your mind, just come from straight up Tennessee receivers just beating guys in single man coverage?
Yeah, I think. So that's a good question. So I think Heupel does some things to get those guys open, like a lot of rub routes. So that's one thing that we saw with, the Jimmy Callaway drop, right, was a play called Mesh, where Cedric Tillman kind of came and picked a guy off. So he got a guy open by the way the routes are run against the man coverage. So I don't know if it's a case – to me, it's not so much a case of Tennessee wide receivers like beating guys one-on-one per se, but I think the scheme works like their man beating concepts. I mentioned earlier, like getting Jalin Hyatt moving. I think we've seen Hyatt not be too effective down the field, which has maybe been a disappointment this year, but found a way to get him the ball in space against Florida, which was nice to see. So I think from that standpoint, it's been a lot of scheme on Heupel's end of like, hey, I've got my menu of these are my man beating concepts, and I think he did a good job calling those, you know, and that, not to pick on Callaway, obviously that drop was big, but then late, there was another fourth down where it was a man beating concept with a rub route, and we hit Payton for, he made a great catch on fourth and I want to say five. So yeah, I don't know if Tennessee is just like torching D-backs or like running away from guys to get open. But I think Heupel's done a good job in that respect.
Well, and as he mentioned last week, it doesn't make him feel any better because the plays aren't being executed at the rate that he would like for them to be executed. So, you know, I don't think anybody would, and you brought up the Jimmy Callaway drop on fourth down where there's just nothing but grass in front of him. I mean, he's got it. He's got it if he makes that catch. And it becomes, I don't know how much different of a game it becomes, but it certainly makes Vols fans feel better about the result as we sit here the Monday afterwards. But this upcoming game against Missouri, Austin, it's an SEC East game. It's a beatable opponent. It's an opportunity for them to really get some solid footing under them. Is this the most important game of their season when you look at the season at large?
Yeah, in my opinion, I would say so. I think you kind of always looked at Florida as being probably a game you weren't going to win. And you're looking at the schedule going, you know, and trying to define, like I think we did on the show, right? Like what would be a successful year?
Right.
I think if you look at like Missouri, South Carolina, and Kentucky, as winnable games in addition to, you know, the Bowling Green win, Vanderbilt, and South Alabama, even though they're 3-0, and have Jake Bentley, who has beaten the Vols before. You know, then you start to look at it. Okay, for first year, maybe you have some optimism about what you can get to. But, yeah, if you drop one of these games to Kentucky, Missouri, or South Carolina, then it starts to get really depressing in terms of what the record might end up being. And it's not completely, you know, you don't want to make excuses, but at the same time, like, you'd like to have your full complement, your full roster for a game like this. And who, I know Heupel was at his press conference not too long ago, said he didn't really know the status on Hendon Hooker. I think everybody is kind of not too optimistic about what Joe Milton can do, especially with the way the game ended against Florida. Obviously, Cooper Mays, warrior, dog, but, like, you know, is he going to be okay?
Yeah, but also so, ankle. Yeah, warrior, yeah. Dog, ankle.
Yeah, ankle, maybe the other ankle, you never know.
Not great.
But yeah, I mean, so definitely a game that you really would like to have if you're Heupel, but at the same time, like, can you do it with the roster that you've got?
Austin, I want to ask you about a late situation in the first half that could apply down the stretch in some of these close games. When Tennessee gets the ball driving down the field, you know, late in the first half with a couple of timeouts and not a lot of time when they forced the fumble and went down to try to kick the field goal. I know a lot of people were frustrated because you felt like there was an opportunity to call a timeout, maybe give yourself one or two extra plays. But I wonder, in your opinion, does calling a timeout there and trying to stretch out that drive time-wise almost come to the detriment of this offense that in that moment, after forcing a turnover, wants to move quick and fly down the field and find some points out the gate? Do you think calling the timeout and slowing things down may actually hurt them there? Maybe that's why he didn't choose to stop the clock?
Yeah, potentially. I don't have too big of an issue with the end of the first half and how it played out. I mean, we got an opportunity for a field goal. I think what is overlooked on that drive is we had two false start penalties back-to-back that we actually overcame to even get into that position. So that speaks to the larger issue of penalties, which were an issue against Pitt, again, an issue last night, and, like, pre-snap penalties. So just a lack of focus and discipline. So I was concerned about that, and I was fine with not taking the timeout up until I think we had, like, 15 seconds left with two timeouts, and I felt like, you know, okay, you're probably playing for the field goal. We could have taken a timeout, run a play, and we had been running the ball pretty well at that point because Cooper wasn't injured yet. And I felt like and Evans and Small had been running well. I felt like we could have used a timeout and run a play to get a little bit closer for that field goal and not, I think it was like 47 yards, something like that. I felt like we could have used the timeout to get a little bit closer. I think that's asking a lot of your kicker to try to hit an almost 50 yarder as the clock's expiring on the road when you had an opportunity to get him a little bit closer. So that was the issue that I had on that drive. But I felt like, you know, the pace that we ran at and it didn't allow Florida to sub. I mean, I think we liked our matchups and we had open guys and Hendon Hooker hit a couple of them. So I think it played out pretty well up until the end.
Austin Burlage at Austin_Burlage. Power T tape. We do it every Monday to wrap up the Vols week that was. Thanks, buddy. And again, congratulations to you and your family. We're really happy for you guys.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you guys. Can't wait to see what the suit looks like next week, Buck.
It's going to look great. I'm going to New York. I got to look fly. Thanks, buddy.
Oh, yeah. See ya.
Yeah, the suit got some heat yesterday. I mean, the suit itself was heat. But, you know, if we're talking about what I was wearing after a Titans game, as much as we're talking about the Titans game, actually, probably that's just me being self-involved. We'll talk about the Titans on the other side. I want to get into some situations that devolved for the Titans throughout the course of the game. Some injuries, some critical ones, and a unique situation, it seems, with the outside linebacking core, and more importantly, Bud Dupree. We'll tell you what that is and how that came to pass in yesterday's game, a win against the Colts. Coming up next, your phone calls as well. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone.
Hines in the backfield with Wentz. They have a kicker with outstanding range in Blankenship, so they probably need about 15 yards. Wentz dropping. Hit. Sack! Ola Adeyemi.
That's Ola Adeyemi. One of his 1.5 sacks yesterday brings him to 2.5. Hell, he should have had 3.5 if Chris Jackson didn't get an illegal contact penalty down the field yesterday against the Colts. It would have made 3.5 on the season for him. I just went to the bathroom during the commercial break, and, you know, as one does, scrolling through my Instagram stories on, or the people that I follow's Instagram stories whilst at the urinal. I believe that's still within the protocol as long as I wipe my phone down with wet wipes, as one does. But I was laughing because Ola Adeyemi has put on his Instagram story a text message that he received from the NFL, and I've since tweeted this out. He is getting randomly selected, or has been randomly selected, for a so he gets a text. It says his full name, his full first name, which I'm going to struggle to pronounce, Ola Sukanami, which is a cool first name if I could do it without butchering it. But Ola, this is blank with drug-free sport. You've been randomly selected for a PED test today, September 27th. The window will be open between 9:30 and 12:30. Please bring an ID to testing, blah, 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 blah. So basically, Ola Daney's getting a random drug test after having two good games back-to-back as a core special teams player historically through four seasons in the NFL, which I think is pretty funny. 615-737-1045 is how you get involved. We're going to talk about Bud Dupree's circumstance and why it's impressive that the Titans pass rush is doing what it is without him yesterday, without him playing a single snap yesterday. Oh, I was just about to go to the caller about Jackrabbit, but he didn't. He dropped off. So we'll talk about Bud now. So the Bud situation is this. They have 46 active spots on an NFL game day roster, right? 53 active roster throughout the course of the week, 46 game day. So you are incredibly selective with the 46 players that you call up on game day. So when Bud Dupree, and Mike Vrabel spoke about this a little bit on Friday in his press conference with the media before the game against the Colts on Sunday, he had talked a little bit about, well, you know, we're kind of still working through how we manage Bud Dupree's rehab and recovery situation off a torn ACL in December. We're still kind of figuring out and managing him on a day-to-day, week-to-week situational circumstances. So, you know, he may be available at some points and he may not be available in some points. But what made yesterday particularly curious is that he was active. He was active against the Colts yesterday. And then as the game progressed, we're looking at least in the press box, we're looking at who's on the field. And this may have been discussed on the TV copy. I watched the TV copy on Game Pass back without sound, typically, and meaning no offense to the CBS broadcast crew yesterday. It's just I don't really feel that it helps me all that much in rewatching a 33-minute condensed version. So perhaps they did talk about it earlier in the broadcast than we were in the press box, but it got to a point in like the second quarter or maybe the second half of the first quarter where we're looking at how many snaps Ola is playing and being like, where the hell is Bud? Is Bud Dupree been in? Teron Davenport at ESPN, he pulls up the snap count, finds out that Bud has not played a single snap thus far and did not start the game, and progresses on without playing. He's just chilling there in his uniform without a helmet. Now, I asked Mike Vrabel about this, and I read you guys this quote earlier, and we would play you the audio, but it's not even worth the time to find it because I said, you know, early in the week, you talked about how you're still managing Bud, and is that the kind of circumstance that went into your decision today? And all Mike said was unavailable. He was there for an emergency. Well, it's rare that you use an active game day spot for a player who's not going to play. That's the whole reason why everybody who's not a starter plays on special teams, and even some starters play on special teams, because of how valuable and how versatile you need those game day roster spots to be. But when you look at the fact that Derek Roberson was a scratch against the Colts yesterday, has not been practicing, has been dealing with injury, so he was unavailable. You have Ola, you have Harold, but outside of that, you have Rashad Weaver, who breaks his fibula as Koharski reported yesterday. So already you're running perilously thin. So it's basically Harold and Ola or bust. And what Vrabel is telling you there is, yeah, like he wasn't going to go unless we absolutely needed a body to go. And you hate for that to be the circumstance that your team finds itself in, which is a fine. Do we have the cash register sound yet?
No.
Bad job out of you.
Yeah.
That's on you. But, and that's on me to pay another fine for blaming you for something that's not really your fault. But that's the circumstance that the Titans were in at outside linebacker. Now, they do have another linebacker on the practice squad. I'm not entirely certain whether he's an inside linebacker or an outside linebacker. But that was a pretty curious situation yesterday. And the more interesting one is, of course, Julio Jones that we'll talk about coming up next at length. But I'm getting a lot of comments or getting a lot of questions about Josh Reynolds, who was also a scratch against Indianapolis yesterday. And I was told by people on the primetime show last night on A to Z Sports Primetime that the television broadcast was saying that Josh Reynolds was ruled out or inactive because he was dealing with illness. And that's apparently not the case, because I went back and looked at that situation and it was determined that Josh Reynolds was a healthy scratch. So what people are saying, particularly somebody like, let's just take Carey, Buckshot Carey, in the chat on YouTube, who said should have kept Mason Kinsey over Josh Reynolds, because it's not the first time he's been a scratch. He's been active for one game against Seattle. Now, with Josh Reynolds and Mason Kinsey, well, you have Mason Kinsey. He's on your practice squad right now. So if he was better than Josh Reynolds, an unhealthy Josh Reynolds or a recovering Josh Reynolds, you could have called him up and made him active for the game. But that was not the route that they chose to do. And in fact, they got production out of Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, out of Cam Batson, out of Jeremy McNichols, and of course, out of Chester Rogers. But when we come back, we'll talk about why they had to go to those depth guys. Because Julio Jones, basically from halfway through the third quarter on, didn't play. And the answer from Mike Vrabel yesterday after the game as to why he did not play will intrigue you. We'll let you hear that sound coming up next. We'll also spend some time on Ryan Tannehill. Your phone calls are welcome as well. And don't forget, Mike Vrabel will speak to the media at 12:30. We'll carry that press conference live. I'm Buck Rising. It's 104.5 The Zone.